I think food is a definite motivator, especially in student housing. I think this is where working with your vendors, so vendors, if you're listening, asking them to help when it comes to the food piece. I've always asked them to provide at least one meal during turn. It's just an easy way. You're spending a lot of money and the staff really does appreciate it.
This episode of the Student Housing Insight Podcast is sponsored by Smarter Furnishings. Regardless if you have a brand new development in the pipeline or if you are just looking to replace some damaged furniture for summer turn, Smarter Furnishings has you covered. The team at Smarter understands the needs of student housing because they've been building and designing furniture for universities and off-campus housing providers for 3 decades. And get this, over those 3 decades, they've never had a delay in delivery. That's saying a lot. Not only about their logistics, but it says a lot about their dedication. Regardless if you're just looking for case goods that are ready to ship, or if you're wanting to design something custom for an upcoming project, Smarter can meet all of those needs. Get in touch with them today by visiting their website at smarterfurnishings.com. We'll also provide a link in the show notes. Welcome to the Student Housing Insight Podcast, where we are putting you in touch with the people who bring student housing to life. I'm your host, Wesley Dees. I'm also the CEO and founder of Student Housing Insight. That's correct. We're not just a podcast, but we are a company, and I would say more of a platform for student housing professionals to network and share data and ideas. If you want to learn more, go to studenthousinginsight.com. And joining me today is a special guest co-host, Matt Windsor with the Turn Company. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Wes. Really pick it up this year.
Well, I've got you here. So everybody knows already we're going to be talking about Turn. So yeah. This is the annual Turn episode. So, Turn Company, speaking of annual, you guys are coming up on your, 1 year rebirth day. What we're calling it? For those in the audience that don't know about Turn Company, don't know about that rebirth this time last year, give them a quick synopsis of that.
Yeah, sure. So we launched the Turn Company in 2020. We were with Cardinal Group. So I joined Cardinal Group in 2015. I started in student housing in 2005. I was with GMH first and then ACC. Took them over in 2008. So I was with ACC for 3 years and then I was with Campus Advantage. And then I joined Cardinal in 2015. But yeah, we launched the Turn Company in 2020 under the Cardinal banner. And, right before COVID and everything. And then we built the business up through 2022. And then in 2023, Cardinal was gracious enough to allow Eddie and I to purchase it from them and break it apart and kind of build it into its own kind of company. So that was, we officially took back over in April and the relaunch was May 1st, 2023. So yeah, it's coming up here in, about, 30, 45 days.
So, now that you kind of got that first year under your belt, any lessons learned?
Yeah. We've learned a lot. And, being outside of the industry, for the first time in, decades, definitely gives us a unique perspective on the, just the environment as a whole. But, the first thing we learned, kind of coming out of property management and going over to the vendor side and then, applying that back to the property management side, our experience. I mean, the relationships are so important. So all the relationships you can build in property management with your vendors, they are extremely important. And, when you're in it, you might not understand that, but then when you break away from it and then you have to maintain those relationships in a different way, you realize the importance of them.
Any cool projects you guys have been involved in?
One thing we learned too is that a lot of the stuff we do during turn, applies to a lot of other industries. And the fact that Turn is such a condensed and compressed, you know, kind of pressure cooker of a project,
yeah,
it makes other projects outside of Turn a lot simpler, a lot easier. In January, we completed our first hotel PIP, which is a property improvement plan for hotels. Yeah,
so cool.
Getting into hospitality a little bit. And it works. It applies.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of felt like with everything you guys were doing, the hospitality seemed like, you know, kind of a obvious next move, right? Interesting to hear that that's happening. Well, hey, we've got a interview that I do with someone, the former colleague of yours at Cardinal. She's also one of our ambassadors, Piper Schlink, who is a portfolio manager with Cardinal. And she's also one of our ambassadors for our 2024 cohort. And super excited to have her helping us out this year and promoting everything that we're doing. But one of the tasks that I have for our ambassadors each year is, hey, you've got to come up with a piece of content for, you know, just pick a month and that's your month to do a piece of content. And so she was the first one to raise her hand and say, I want to do something on Turn. She didn't care what month. It was just, I want to do something on Turn. So we'll get into that interview here in a little bit, but wanted to kind of bring you on. You've listened to that interview, so I want to see what kind of takeaways you've got. But before we get into that, let's just talk about, because you're kind of seeing things maybe a little bit in advance of what the rest of us are. What are you seeing with supply chain and labor supply issues? Are we going to have a lot of that this year? What are you hearing from the contractors that you talk to on a regular basis?
Generally, the supply chain's back to normal for the most part for MRO, you know, maintenance, repairs, operations, cleaning supplies. What we're seeing is a longer lead times on the larger items and the more costly items. So, you know, furniture is going to be a longer lead time. Of course, we've seen, you know, over the past several years, furniture orders getting moved back in some cases to December of the prior year. And that is partly due to these supply chain issues, just to make sure they will arrive on time. Longer delays on HVAC supplies and things like that. But yeah, I think things are starting to stabilize a little bit. I mean, obviously, inflation is going to impact year-over-year pricing and things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But where we're really seeing these costs shift is in labor. COVID had a big impact on this as well. Like, we've seen a 30 to 40% increase in the cost of paint since 2020. But, you know, labor is where we're really seeing
these 40%.
Yeah, yeah. If you go back and look at the price in 2020.
You're just talking about paint labor, not paint itself, right?
Oh, sorry. I'm actually talking about the paint itself.
The paint itself. Okay.
Yeah,
wow. The
material cost. Yes. Yeah. The material cost has gone up since, and that's since COVID. So that's over a 4-year period. But compared to other supplies that we're looking at, that one is going to be the highest increase for the property expense. I mean, we do purchase paint in some situations, but typically that's not an expense that we're incurring. That's the on-site teams taking that one on.
Gotcha. Is that, I mean, you're seeing that regardless if it's Sherwin or Low Supply or whatever?
It's the industry as a whole had to crank up their costs there. And that is in part due to these supply chain issues. But again, you know, even so, you know, they're not quite a commodity yet, but, you know, at a point where those are just kind of prices you have to deal with. The labor is where we're really seeing a lot of difficulties out there. I mean, one report I read was 1 in 4 properties are shorthanded and 50% of properties report difficulties and concerns about hiring and retaining their teams.
Yeah. So if I'm a manager and I did my budget last year and I knew what, you know, kind of at that point, what the costs were going to be for Turn 23. And, you know, there used to be a day where we could just, you know, put 3% increases on all of our expenses.
I know.
So maybe I didn't put 3%. Maybe I put in 8%, 12% across some of those expenses. Is there anything out there that you would say, hey, 8% is not going to get it? Any thoughts on that you could share with the audience?
Yeah. So after insurance, which I believe increased year over year from 2022 to 2023 by about 18%, a little over 18%, that's mainly due to weather. increased weather concerns. Maintenance costs were second, the second highest increase in year-over-year costs from 22 to 23 at 14.2 is what I've got here from the report I read. So yeah, after
8% basically wouldn't have got anything.
Yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of these things are just macroeconomic impacts on labor forces, on construction, centralization, and the moves toward that within the industry are all impacting these things.
I thought centralization would actually reduce that.
Well, I guess on the supply side, it's possible, possibly on the labor side, but there's such a maintenance shortage that these costs are going up because they're having to hire third parties like us. To come in and augment or supplement the maintenance team. So I believe that's having a bigger impact on the cost. And it is interesting that the centralization impacts, you know, not everything is going to be, you know, positive. There's always, you know, there's going to be a lot of positives and some negatives.
Take away from one and add to the other.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, part of that will be, you know, fewer people on site, fewer of the on-site members on the team. With the automation that comes in and things like that, you know, just having those fewer people on there with the centralization as well, it's just going to, you know, if you are down one or two maintenance guys, it has a bigger impact than it would prior when you had 10 employees on site.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily, you know, taking away from one line item and adding to another line item. It's more of just the time of the year as well, you know, that it sounds like.
Yes.
Because if you're reducing that overall labor on the maintenance side because you were able to do without a porter or whatever, but now you're going to have to kind of pick some of that up on some of this contracted labor.
Timing is hugely important. And, you know, if it's labor, if it's paint, furniture, ACs, appliances, the closer you get to summer, the more expensive these items are going to get. Supply is going to go down. Demand is going to continue to increase. And so you're going to see lots more delays and higher costs for that. So the sooner you can get ahead of those things, the sooner you get your ordering lined up, making sure everything's lined up with your budget and everything. But the sooner you get your labor locked down for turn, the better. And that's always been true. But post-COVID, it becomes, it's a different kind of situation post-COVID these years when it comes to labor.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get into this conversation that I had with Piper about preparing for turn. And this is really for, you know, someone, and she mentions that she really wanted to create something for someone who maybe this is their first turn ever. Maybe it's their first turn that, you know, they're in the property manager seat or, you know, within another seat, specifically on site. How to adjust, how to be ready. And so I think she's got some great pointers. So, you know, you've listened to this in advance, any kind of, pointers or things you would say to the audience, hey, make sure you pay attention when she talks about this.
Obviously communication is extremely important during turn.
Right?
I think it's huge. A lot of that is up to the managers. You know, it is subjective how you're communicating and how often and with whom and all of those things, of course, extremely important. More objectively, though, time management and overtime, you can see how many hours your people are working. It is extremely difficult to manage that during turn, but it is an objective, you know, something you can measure that you can actually keep track of. So I would say pay extra special attention to that because payroll costs are always huge, you know, a huge part of everyone's budget, huge part of the expenses. So those overtime, you know, while it seems like a very compressed timeline of that 2 week period during turn, those overtime costs can have a massive impact on your, you know, overall expenses. I would say,
and it's one of those
attention. Yeah.
It's, and Piper and I talk about it. It's one of those things where if you're not being intentional, like you've got to set alarms for yourself because it's so easy to kind of you think about a normal day during turn, if there is such a thing. And, you know, there'd be times I would be, you know, working on a turn board and, you know, going back and forth, checking behind vendors. And I would come back and somebody would be, you know, because it's all hands on deck. And so you just, a lot of times everybody knows the schedule is like, it's a schedule, but that's not what we're going to go by. You need to make sure you have your day available because something could blow up. And And if you don't remember to tell somebody to go home,
yeah,
all of a sudden it's 7 o'clock and they're still sitting at the desk or whatever. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Yeah. You got to get out of here. You're supposed to leave like 3 hours ago.
Yeah. And you know, when I did it, I would always try and give people days off. I'd have a whole schedule, who's doing what every single day, and then try and layer in some days off here and there for the people. And I know it's all hands-on, but if you can manage to do that, it makes a tremendous impact. But I think, you know, one of the more important things she said too was having a pivot plan. There's never been a perfect turn. I don't think there ever will be. There's no such thing as a flawless diamond. Having a plan for when things go wrong is more important. We all want to hope that everything goes the way we planned it, but be ready for things to go wrong. And when you do that, when those things do happen, you don't have to go into a crisis mode or anything. You're ready for it. And that's really important. And I think, don't know that I've heard that many regionals or portfolio managers really hit on that the way she did. I thought it was great.
Well, great. Well, let's go ahead and go to that discussion. I don't think it's really necessarily an interview, but it's a discussion and a great presentation on some key things from someone who is well into the weeds of preparing for turn. So let's go to that now. Piper, welcome to the podcast.
Excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. For those that don't know, Piper is one of our 2024 SHI ambassadors. And so thank you very much for being a part of that group and helping promote and helping me produce some content for 2024.
Yeah, always. I've listened to you guys forever, so it's an exciting moment for me.
Well, it's fun to have you part of the crew. You're actually going to be helping us out at Interface in April. So thanks for agreeing to go on that adventure with us. That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. I love Austin, so.
Well, hey, for our audience who may have no clue who Piper is, and while we're talking about turn today, how about giving us just a little bit of background on yourself and kind of what you're bringing to the table today?
Yeah. So I'm a portfolio manager with Cardinal Group Management. I've been in student housing since 2011, started out as a CA in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I've bounced around in probably every role you can on site, moved up to corporate, and now I work with a great group at Cardinal. And I wanted to talk about turn because it's one of the things that I feel like makes or breaks teams a lot of times when you're on site.
It does. I always tell people turn will either promote you or expose you.
That's true. I also think it's one of those experiences where everyone in the thick of it feels like it's the worst thing they could ever have happened to them. And a year later, we're all excited for it, weirdly enough, again, if it went well.
Well, even if it does, I mean, you know, nothing's going to go perfect with turn. I mean, that's just the way that it is. But yeah, it's one of those things when you get to the other side, if you've survived, if you're successful to a point that something didn't burn down to the ground on move-in day, it is one of the most rewarding feelings you can have. At least that's the way I've viewed it myself.
No, agreed. I always tell my teams it's doing the impossible and making it possible. And
yes.
I don't know. It's one of those, every year though, I tend to like black out talking to a parent. And then 6 months later when they come into me, I'm like, yeah, that sounds familiar. I think I was there. Like, did that happen? But it's a good time. Turn is a year long thing and we only give it the value for a 2 week window usually, but it's a year long process.
Yeah, it was, you can always, figure out who the passionate ones are when you start talking about student housing, and in turn is the first thing they want to talk about, which was, with the ambassadors this year, as I do every year, hey, you've got to create one piece of content. It could be a blog, it could be a podcast, it could be a video, it could be something else I'm not even thinking about, but some piece of content that, you're passionate about that you want to talk about. And you were the first one to raise your hand and be like, I want to talk about turn. So that goes a long way and really kind of telling your passion for the industry, if that's the first thing that you want to talk about. So, well, you know, we're sitting here about to go into March. The past couple of years have been really kind of crazy when it comes to preparing for term, because a lot of it, you know, just had to do with supply chain stuff, be it ordering a replacement furniture, or if it was, you know, just your typical blinds and carpet and things like that. I'm kind of wondering from you, you know, before we, you know, dig deep into it, how are things looking with supply chains this year? Are you guys getting any pushback from any of your suppliers on, hey, we've got to have something ordered even earlier this year? How are those conversations going?
So far, I mean, I think furniture in general, I would say if you haven't ordered, order it now. We had to have our orders in by the first of the year. That was just like a set goal for our teams to ensure no issues. When it comes to your turnover supplies, as far as materials through HD or, well, Wilmar's not HD anymore, but Wilmar, anything like that, we haven't seen much pushback. I will say a lot of teams, because of prior years, we're now getting ahead and getting our small stockpiles going to ensure that. And I think that's one of the areas, flips over to my biggest point with Turn, is how are you preventatively addressing a lot of these things prior to getting into the thick of Turn? If you can order your blinds now and start changing them out and charging people, like, that's the better move.
Yeah.
Then you're not fighting for blinds or doing the 2 a.m. light bulb run to like Home Depot. I've had to do that a few times. You know, maintenance doesn't tell you to your last two buildings that you don't have light bulbs. Oh, and by the way, we ran out of paint. Like, how do we do that? So I think with all my years, there's always been, you know, one move-in moment that shifted how I look at it the next year. And so that's really, we started our conversations with our teams about turn, start of the year. Contracts are already signed for vendors because we don't want to be in a bind in 6 months when it's actually here.
Well, let me ask you, how, you know, did you find yourself this year, how do you end things at turn with your portfolio? Is it something where you're just like, oh God, we got through that. You know, let's make the changes that we need to get rid of some of the folks that obviously were exposed versus promoted. And then just we'll start talking about it again in December. You know, is it that kind of approach, or is it, you know, something a little bit more tactical?
A little more tactical. And I'll say my team's had it rough this past year. Not really. But we did turn and we basically did a 1 week like recap following, like, what were your wins? What were your losses? What are we going to do different next year? And actually 3 weeks later, we took our teams to do a budget boot camp. And so we were already thinking about turn doing their budgets 3 weeks after move-in, because it was, how do we plan and strategically ensure we're prepped for where we failed this past year? How are we aligning those goals and really having the conversations with the rest of our on-site team so that we can avoid our failures from the year prior? So that past turn. So if I had a site, let's say, that didn't order enough blinds, or maybe we saw a lot more AC issues in the midst of turn, that was already a conversation September 1. We're going to budget appropriately to hit that stuff early in our quarter 4 walks. And then hopefully by those quarter 2 walks, it's streamlined to we're not handling as much during the turn process. That's come with years of doing turns and like it not going, I don't want to say bad, anybody owners listen, but not going perfectly, and it being that night before you're painting a wall, you know, how can we avoid that? Let's start having the conversation earlier. And I think for a lot of these turn vendors that look forward to it this like year round, this is their like their time to shine, or this is their only business. If we can have those conversations earlier, it allows them to prepare better, which in turn makes an overall better. So it's a continual. We finish the year, we reflect really quickly, and then we say, how are we going to set ourselves up for success the next year?
That's so, you know, that's so key in a lot of the things that you were, you know, talking about as far as like going ahead and replacing the blinds, you know, going ahead and making that, you know, that paint for, you know, someone that, yeah, you've got to. Maybe you've got one person that's moved out and the other roommates, a couple of the other roommates are moving out. But if you've got the ability to go ahead and get that, you know, that room painted, a couple of weeks early, it's just, you know, you're that much further ahead. And that's a lot to convince some of the team, both internal team as well as your external team, yeah, with your contractors to try and do, because you know, a lot of folks just want to put it off and say, look, let's just stack it up like dominoes and we'll do it all at the same time. And I completely get that approach. I really, really do. But there, especially the things where you've got to, a lot of the punch stuff, mm-hmm, that's never made sense. Like, why would you put that off? Like, you know, punch is always the group that has to kind of, you know, weave and bop and, you know, float around like a butterfly, you know, in order to try to get in and get everything done that they need to get done. And so more of those, you know, oven outlets and all those little things that you can replace beforehand, I think it makes a lot of sense. Anything else from a preventative, you know, maintenance standpoint that you would say, hey, listeners, if this is your first time going through a turn, make sure you're doing this?
So I would say really make sure you're using any quarterly or unit walks prior to turn to knock out something preventive maintenance wise, whether it be your appliances, whether it be your ACs. Those are the two big things I see slow us down during turn. And then communicating early. So when you do those walks, communicating the standard for what you're going to set up for move out is what makes the difference. Like, if your residents know that, they're going to clean up their apartment and try to address that stuff before you come in for a quarterly walk. That's one time they're touching it that maybe they never touched it before. So when you get to that move out walk, they already know, if I don't have this clean or looking good or they're checking that, I'm going to be held accountable, because you can set that standard really early. And, you know, I've been in markets where it's, you have the best residents and there's some that probably are never going to learn. But it's all in what we do to set the expectation from the get-go for our teams and for the residents.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, communication. And, you know, that's, I'm drawing a blank on, you know, kind of who said it, but, you know, I think you could take it all the way back to biblical times. And when it comes down to communication, like a people, a country, a team, a town, whatever, if you're not all speaking the same language, you're going to have issues. Yeah. And I think that really gets, you know, going back to that turn will either expose you or promote you. I think that's one thing that immediately comes to the top, is if you're not communicating, you're going to be set up for failure really quick. What are some things you use with your teams to, you know, kind of get them on the same page and talking and with each other and, yeah, you know, upline and downline?
So I think there's an early stage set of communication between my teams going over what the game plan for turn is now. Me having that conversation with an owner, because I do third party. So directly working with the owner to say, hey, this is what we're seeing. Or we're seeing a shift in cost increases. We didn't budget for that shift because we didn't know they were going to charge us 5% more. We want to give you the heads up because that's going to affect us. So I think just having an open and honest communication, which is hard, it's never good, but if you are honest with the bad news early, it lessens the blow when turn gets here. It's what I've learned.
Now, what kind of bad news would you, be delivering?
If you walk a unit and you're like, wow, my carpet, I'm not going to make it in that $50,000 budget. I'm looking at a $75,000 budget, you know, like, being ahead, as proactive as you can on that piece with your communication, makes it a lot less painful, but it also sets your vendor up, because it's a flip side. You know, if they don't have enough materials for your flooring, then you're scrounging. This is where you get the, I call them Mosh Posh units, where it's like the five, yeah, units who have a different floor than everywhere else on the property.
Yeah.
Because that's, you had to get something. Don't worry, I had a year where someone moved in with no flooring. Sorry. I was not in charge that year, but that did happen. But I think starting that type of conversation early with your team, so it's a trickle-down effect. I'm having the upper end, and on-site teams are having conversations with our vendors. And if, yeah, we are on the same page in March, and then each month continuing out to reiterate where we're trending, as far as units we're turning over or last minute renewals, it's going to set them up better, especially in a lot of these bigger markets where they're doing multiple sites, to really map out if their timeline fits with the original contract you agreed to. I've had it where a carpet cleaner will be like, look, you actually had a higher renewal percentage. I can knock your, you know, new lease rooms, your vacants, in a weekend. Are you okay if I prioritize this site that maybe had a rougher year? Yeah, that's fine. As long as I'm still on there and I'm still being a priority, I can make that work. Let me shift around my other vendors, you know, but I think it requires months of communication leading up to turn. The turns that go the worst are the ones where you haven't seen a vendor since you signed a contract. So until they get their list, they don't know what they're doing. It's all planning. It is. And then execution.
Do you typically, one thing that I used to try to push managers to do was to, you know, have a, either one, you're going through the RFP process, but I think it makes a lot more sense to, you know, we're doing the RFP process so early these days that I think, you know, making sure that you come back kind of early May or whatever and having like some type of cookout or dinner or luncheon or whatever you want to call it for the vendors, you know, their employees, the folks that are going to be a part of it. Is that something you try to push your folks to do?
I do. I usually encourage a dinner with all their vendors, and it one makes them aware of what other vendors maybe they're working with if they don't all come together with a group. It sets an open communication. You know, it makes it more of a people business because we are working together, and a lot of these vendors will work for you for years if you do it right. And so starts it off on a friendly aspect, makes it open so that when they have questions arise, they can. I've always found the best turn vendors. They'll at that point be like, do you have a turn board that I can just see?
Yeah.
Do you have it on standby? I'll say that's changed because we use a lot of digital programs now. So it's a combination. I've seen it like Google Sheets, or we use Leo 24/7. So like, it's not something maybe that our vendors right now are getting access to, but I think that's the future of it, is like, we're all in the system. We all have real time information, and it reduces the error for communication, because I was in the industry when we started off with sheets, and we just handed everybody a yellow sheet, a green sheet.
Yeah.
Didn't bring me the sheet back with a signature. I'm not paying you.
Oh, if I showed up at a property this summer, and because this has happened, like I've had, you know, as a consultant, I've had folks call me up and say, our manager just went out on maternity leave like a month early. Like, and of course I'm like, it might be a month early, but you still knew, like,
there was, you know, there should have been some,
but I'm glad I could be your plan. Thanks for telling me now. But yeah, and I walk in and there's nothing that has been scheduled. I mean, to the point that there's not even, you know, vendors that are contracted. And the last time that happened, it was kind of one of those things of, okay, I can handle this. Like I've been thrown into this situation before, but I have to just go to paper. Like I'll get frustrated because I'm like, you know what? I could use Easy Turn, or I could do this or that, but there's too much setup. I'm so thankful that I've got that background of, you know, if I had to do the whole thing on paper, I know that I could do it, right? It's one of those things where I think, you know, and I'm so far kind of removed from operations these days, you know, when it comes to a lot of those new, you know, tools and tricks and tips, and, you know, when it comes specifically to turn, that there's definitely a better way to do it. But if you haven't taught your team how to do this on an Excel sheet and using paper checklists, that other stuff's not even going to necessarily sink in, I feel like. But it is one of those things where if someone could go through that process one time where they're just, but you can't, you know, because it only happens one time a year, and you can't set yourself up for, you know, for failure right away. But seriously, if I don't know how we recreate that, but if there's a way that we could throw a manager into the fire like that, where we could say, okay, you've got move-in happening in 7 days, nothing's been done, go see what you can do. I would love to see how many people would come out on the other side of that with
you know,
with all their hair intact.
I would say probably not many. I think this is the hard part. at least in my position, is that I did start in student housing when it was paper. We read the lease to everyone. You know, every lease was, we had one copy that was signed. If someone ran out of our office with that copy, we didn't have a lease anymore. Like, that was that, you know? So I do think there's a value in teaching a pivot plan if something that is a set structure or a digital plan doesn't work.
Yeah.
I always tell my teens is this. I would like you to use the tools we provide you and plan, and we try to really drill in that let's practice using them months leading up to this. So when we get into it, it doesn't feel brand new. But at the end of the day, to get through TURN, you have to do what you have to do to get to the finish line. The biggest pieces, yeah, though, are just making sure that you know what vendors need to be there, what they need to do, and following up behind them. Because
yeah,
if you don't follow up early and communicate what maybe is not setting your standards, your whole plan goes to waste. So
yeah, yeah.
Communication is key from the point of staff members to corporate team members, but directly with the vendors and even for the residents, you know, once again, setting that expectation. If your move-in letter has, you know, hey, these are our clean standards and we hope you keep up with them all year. And then you lap around at the end of the year and you say, hey, these are our clean standards. We're going to hold you accountable for these.
Yeah.
You'll see a stark difference in how your residents help you do TURN. That's what I've learned.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And yeah, I didn't get back to the communication thing because it kind of went down that rabbit hole of, yeah, you know, being thrown in to the fire. That was the one thing that, you know, I had to be very, very intentional with in that situation was pulling the vendors that I was searching for, some that were somewhat aware of the situation, and sit them down and just talk and say, look, this is the reality of the situation. If you don't want to be here, I completely understand it. Trust me, I've gone through this. You know, I can answer any question that you've got as to, you know, from a procedural standpoint as to how something's going to happen, but this is what I need from you.
Yeah.
You know, and then backing that up and just saying, look, there's, yeah, you're not here. You know, I'm not expecting you to impress me with something or to pull the wool over my eyes on something. I'm going to make sure that you're paid on time and that, you know, you're getting all the things that you need. And I think, you know, if you communicate those things and give them just an assurance of, yeah, this may not actually be the turn that we were thinking it was going to be, but, you know, we're in this together. That goes a long ways. Agreed. When it comes to jumping into the fire like that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, let's talk a little bit about, some of this is going to be budget, but, you know, staffing. Mm-hmm. And specifically with temp help and overtime and that type of thing. I think that was always one of the things that, you know, both myself as a manager, as well as when I was overseeing managers, that there's this mentality after you've gone through one or two that, okay, well, everything's kind of, you know, no one's got vacation. Everyone's got to be committed to being here. And, you know, the next thing you know, you've got overtime out the yin yang. What are some of the things you've done to kind of curve that and make sure that, one, we're not abusing things when it comes to our coworkers, but also, you know, making sure that, you know, from the performance of the asset, that we're not abusing that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think temporary help these days is one of the hardest things to find. So I'm just going to 100% put that out there. It's been one of the harder challenges, I think, since COVID to find someone willing to come in for such a short window.
Yeah.
Even if you pay really well, it's not a full commitment. So we've been very strategic with how we find temporary help. You know, really utilizing them for the specific times you need it, whether it be furniture delivery days. Maybe we're getting specifically movers and spending all our money to have movers that we've mapped everything out. They can do the install and it removes our team from having to do that heavy lifting, or getting temporary help to be, I call it a house mom, to do the errands for the property. That way your CM, your ACM, your LMTL can be in the thick of it. And they kind of run that front of house end just for any of the quirks and nuances that come in from residents. They get lunch, you know, like they do all the back end planning that is taskly, but can really take away from you getting through a goal for the day. So those have been the best ways with temporary help I've found, is that we're just very strategic in how we find temporary help. Like, where do we have a missing piece and how can we fill it? The next piece of that, I would say, though, is when it comes to hours, and I wouldn't say avoiding overtime because you can't do that during intern, but being, once again, strategic with your overtime is I encourage my teams every day to start off with a staff meeting where it says, hey, these are the 5 goals for the day. If we get through these 5 goals at 6 p.m., we're meeting. Let's convene where we are and see where we're at. You know, I don't want to keep anybody here till midnight. I know you don't want to be here till midnight. So if we can achieve these at 6, we can reevaluate. Do we take on one more goal from the next day coming? Or are we still working on this where we're committing, hey, let's power through and get till 8 p.m. so we can get out of here. I think the one thing I've always learned when I either am helping teams or I've ran a turn is that people are not nearly as helpful if you keep them there from 9 p.m. to midnight, which when I started in student housing, that used to be like a norm. I don't know. I remember being there. Maybe I just blacked out, but till 2 a.m. most nights. And I think that that doesn't have to be the case. You know, if people aren't their strongest, they're not motivated, sometimes it's just making sure that, hey, our hard cutoff is going to be 8 o'clock. That's a reasonable time at that point. If we're not meeting our goals, then we have to reevaluate our plan. But if you set those standards with your teams a lot of times beforehand, they're going to come in with a fresh mindset because they want to be out at that time, especially with college kids. I definitely remember I had a year where CIs or CAs at Cardinal, they all wanted to go to a concert. And so they all bought tickets during turn, knowing that they weren't supposed to be going to this concert or we didn't know when we were ending. And I just had to, you know, approach it with the same approach I take to my toddler is like, is it worth me pushing them over the edge and they all quit tomorrow by not letting them go to the concert? We're in a good position. I'm going to let them all go tonight, but I'm going to get the disclaimer of tomorrow I expect you to come in at 110%. Tomorrow we're going to be 2 steps ahead so that we're not behind at the end. So I think really the teams that do the best is the ones who are connecting, communicating with their team from the get-go of the day and working as a team to reevaluate the day at the end of the day. The staff has to be bought in. They have to be bought in with how successful turn's going to be and how it's going to make their life easier. They don't think they're going to get yelled at on move-in day because we're doing so well. They're probably going to be more bought in to giving 110 the whole way through turn than dragging out the payroll just to get the hours only to get yelled at in 2 weeks, you know?
My daughter just, you may have heard the ding on my phone. My daughter had just sent me a text message asking for some money to be put on the Chick-fil-A app, which immediately reminded me that we probably should talk about, hey, what do we do for lunch? What do we do? How do we got to keep this machine going? Any thoughts or ideas there that you want to share with folks on making sure that
you're well fed,
keeping everybody fed?
I think food is a definite motivator, especially in student housing. I think this is where working with your vendors, so vendors, if you're listening, asking them to help when it comes to the food piece. I've always asked them to provide at least one meal during turn.
Yeah.
It's just an easy way. You're spending a lot of money and the staff really does appreciate it. On the flip side, finding those connections in your market. Turn is a full setup for your year. If you have great connections that help supply food during turn, that sets up your marketing calendar for the year. These all go hand in hand. And I think sometimes we forget that because we're in the right now thick of it. But I've always found if you can make those connections earlier in the summer months, have a scheduled meal, then you can. If for some reason you don't have someone who can sponsor these meals, I've always found, and this is, you know, my teams might not like this, they've always seemed to like it, if we do kind of a team rotation. So I allow 2 to 3 team members to make, let's say, a lunch for everybody. They get to have 2 mm-hmm. hours away from, you know, the real in-action turn. They put together a meal of their choice and we sit down with the family. And I think it allows bonding, because that's the one, you know, piece that comes out of TURN with teams, is like you become so close with your team. The teams that really bond during TURN are typically the ones you see go through the year, and it's like everyone's crying and a team member has to graduate, you know?
Yeah.
So I try to set up those experiences within TURN, but make it fun. So if they're making peanut butter and jellies and ramen noodles together.
I was going to say, there's probably a lot of hamburger helper that
you know what
is made during that time.
I think they love that though, because I think if you came from the early days of TURN, it was sandwiches and pizza. Like, we all ate so much pizza and so many sandwiches.
Oh.
That weirdly enough, I would prefer a hamburger helper in the mix, you know, or a bag Caesar salad with a sandwich.
Yeah.
So I think just making it fun for your teams, you know, that keeps them motivated and it gives them a moment to step away from the action, but still be a part of the end goal.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about tips and tricks. And the one thing I wanted to ask you about, because I don't have a tip or a trick for it. I was recently taking a look at some access controls for a client, and they've got a special kind of focus on student housing that they want to take. And everything that I was used to using, you know, 7-8 years ago, you know, before I got into this side of the business, was, yeah, the little black fobs that I think Assa Abloy, you know, make or whatever. And that was so prevalent across student housing. Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm being told that stuff that they've stopped making it. And Piper's shaking her head. So what are people doing because you can't just go out and switch out all the electronic locks. And I'm so disappointed about that, because one, it was a great system. But it was also, it was one of those things where that, you know, if someone asked me about keys, you know, how to handle keys for TURN, I'm like, look, I can draw it out for you, but I can tell you if you've got mechanical keys and this is the way that you want to, you know, and you don't have a master key in place, I'm just going to tell you, you're going to be spending way too many hours chasing down keys. Mm-hmm. And the best thing for you to do is make sure everybody knows how to drill out a lock, because that's what you're going to end up spending most of your time doing. And really just pushing everybody, at least for the front door locks, to go with, you know, an electronic solution. And that was typically the go-to. So what's happening? What are people telling you?
Well, I would say those black keys, I still see them at my sites, and we're in the process of
I've probably got one in a drawer around here somewhere.
We're transitioning to a key system, hopefully something that is compatible where students could use it from their phone. I think keys make you some income, but very little income. And so the benefit there is they can easily access from their phone. I still have sites, though, with your old regular front door key, and we have to rotate lock changes. And so that goes back to that preventative, you know, right now, ensuring we have access to every front door on property. Like, we have a key for that. If not, we're drilling it out now. We're handing them new keys now, because nothing's worse than getting to TURN and you're trying to drill through locks, or you don't have maintenance who knows how to do it, and you're pulling from other sites. Definitely with the keys, anything you can do right now to set keys up for success makes it 1,000 times easier. Cutting those keys now and having them ready and stored in your bags to go is way better than trying to rotate keys you're getting in the office. I will say, when it comes to common areas, so like your clubhouses, if you don't have a key fob system that's newer, I think that's relatively inexpensive, a few $1,000s. But you can do the digital card, similar to like a hotel card on your phone or a regular like flip card. That's the way to go. Outside of that, I mean, I think when it comes to TURN tips and tricks, I would say, especially if you're not experienced in TURN, let's say it's your first TURN or your first 4 TURNs, because no one's experienced, even if you're 10 years in, I feel like. The biggest thing I found is just, one, as the leader, you have to keep up the energy. Like, this is the time to bring all the hype up you have. It could be the worst day, but if you don't have a hype up, it's going to make it that much longer.
And be aware if you're not that person, yeah. Because let me tell you, I'm not that person. You know, I'm a type C on the disc. Like, it doesn't mean that I'm not happy or that I'm not excited, or it's just, I internalize it and it does not come out, you know, it takes a lot for it to come out. So if you're that type of person, know it, own it, explain it to your team in advance of, hey, this is just how I am. But don't make that an excuse for yourself. You've got to, if you've got to set an alarm on your phone for 4 or 5 times during the day that you're going to be upbeat, that's what you do, because your team is dependent on it.
Yep. They're very much dependent. They feed off of, you're in such close quarters during turn, you're feeding off of each other's energy. So if the person leading has a good energy, it could all be going south, but at least you can laugh about it when you get through it. You know, if you can't do that, everyone's just going to want to walk out the door. We never want to see that happen. So I think having a good energy, and I think the, you know, other piece of that is, if a problem arises, have a pivot plan. And if you don't have one, lean on your company, your other CMs, you know, your people in the market. Weirdly enough, turn is the one time where it's like we're all competing, and then we all can be besties for a week, and then we'll go back to competing next week. I've seen it happen many a times where I've had to call another company and say, hey, my maintenance quit today. I don't know what to do or what to order for this water heater. Can anybody please come over and just tell me what measurements I'm looking for? Yeah. Or, hey, my keys aren't working. That's like electronic keys. I had electronic keys that weren't working. Someone came and showed me how to drill them out. So it's the one time where I think we're all in this together, and people forget that a lot of times, but everyone's willing to help. You just have to ask if you need it. Don't wait until the day before move-in. Ask as soon as a problem arises. That would be my biggest advice.
That's such a good point. That's, how do you make those relationships? You know, I think, yeah, because look, if you've come into a market, you've been there for a year, and outside, you know, the only thing you've ever done when it came to communication was call them for a weekly market survey. Like, that's not gonna, you're not gonna be able to call that ticket in come turn if that's the only communication that you've had. You got to make time to go out and meet them for drinks or lunch or whatever, and kind of create that relationship, because if you spend the whole year not fostering that, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get down to crunch time, it all depends on what kind of day they're having, if they're going to respond to you or not. So
that's very true. I mean, I think that's the beauty of student housing. It's so big, but it's so little. So it's all what we make of it. I think this is the time, though, to do it. Like, if you don't have those relationships, start them now.
Yeah.
You might not have to call in the favor, but you know what? It'd be way nicer to have Susie down the road than your boss that's on the other side of the country try to come help you in emergency. So.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, cool. Well, look, I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I feel like, you know, for the folks that are out there that have never done a turn, maybe this is their first time being a manager during turn, I feel like they've got some good pointers here to take home and to think about. So thanks so much for spending the time discussing it and giving it some thought as to, hey, if I was back in that position, what would I want to know about turn?
No, definitely.
Well, Piper, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks so much.
Well, again, a big thanks to Piper for spending some time to, you know, kind of lay that out for everybody. It's always great listening to somebody that's, you know, in the field dealing with this stuff day in and day out, and kind of get an understanding for what has changed and what hasn't changed. So, but hey, Matt, any other takeaways from what she said?
No. I mean, she hit all the points. I mean, you know, we love to buy everybody turn meals, you know, so definitely down to that. It is important. It's surprisingly important how much the food matters during turn. to keep everybody's energy up, you know, which is hard. It's difficult. Yeah. That's a big piece of it.
Yeah. It's almost as much as, you know, as much as rest. I think going into move-in day, I think the biggest thing is just trying to give everybody like a day off. Literally that day. I mean, make sure that no one is having to, and again, everything's got to go perfect, but trying to make sure everybody gets a good night's sleep before moving. That is so key to how well your move-in day is going to go. But if you're like me, you're going to stress out regardless of how much everything, you know, how well everything's done. And I will definitely send everybody else home, but I'm still the person that's like, I need to stay in the clubhouse a little bit longer and make sure this, that, and everything else is done. So anyway.
Yeah.
Well, hey, anything else with Turn Company coming up?
Yeah, we're in full blown, you know, contract season right now. Lots of BD and outreach, lots of, you know, meetings with different companies and trying to just expand who we're working with this year and really get our processes down more. You know, this is our fourth year in operation. But, you know, there's always places we can improve. Every year we go through the turn season, we learn so much doing as many as we do year over year. You know, I'll hit on the punch service real quick. That, you know, we had not done any punch services for Turn prior to 2023, prior to last year. And it really started taking off. And a lot of that is due to the maintenance shortage that the industry is experiencing. And they'll often get, you know, deferred until June or July with teams hoping that their team's going to be, they'll be fully staffed going into Turn. And then right before Turn, that's when they realize that the service is needed. So we are open for that. But again, you know, the sooner you get ahead of everything with Turn, the better that turn is going to go. And I know, you know, everybody says that and we say it every year, but it is more true with labor and supplies and ordering. It's more true today than it's been in the past.
Yeah, I would say you guys are probably could probably even expect a few phone calls post turn. we thought our maintenance guy was doing
punch, punches and then that's,
he's no longer here and I've still got stuff that needs to be done.
I know. And it's unfortunate. I mean, we do a lot of turns and we'll be on the turn when the maintenance supervisor leaves. We're there when it happens. We know. We know how difficult it is too, because we've been on that side of it. So, but yeah, that is part of what we're here. That's the gap we are trying to bridge, is supplementing these maintenance teams, having this shortage, you know, seeing where this goes in the future with labor, with costs, with inflation and so on. Always trying to keep an eye on that. But, you know, in the meantime, that's what we're here for, is to provide that supplemental service when you're shorthanded or when you just don't have the time to take care of some of these things. Because these are big investments and big assets. And, you know, we want to make sure they're taken care of.
It's fantastic what you guys are doing. It's one of those things that, you're younger than I am, but it's one of those things. 40s?
Come on. I mean,
yeah, when we were on site, I think everybody said, man, it'd be really cool if we could create this company that could do all this turn stuff and we could just hire that company. And it was always like a business plan that was, you know, filed on shelf 13 or whatever. And it's awesome to see that you guys have done it. So congrats to you guys.
Oh, thank you so much. And, you know, and thank you for all your support over the years. You've always been one of our, you know, hugest supporters and advocates, and we really appreciate it. But yeah, it was a very painful process to get here. You know, the start of the Turn Company was wasn't based on everything going great, you know, for sure. So it took a while to get to where we could, and we're just lucky enough to have the opportunity with Cardinal to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to what's coming with that. I know Eddie's going to be at Interface because he's going to be part of our Look Who's Going to Austin video series that will be coming out here in the next little bit. Outside of Eddie going to Interface, will you be there this year?
I don't believe I'm going to be there this year. We may still be, heavy in our contract process. I'll let Eddie be out there mingling and having fun and having a few drinks. I'll just be behind my computer cranking out as many contracts as I can do in a day. Yeah, we got to divide the labor up, you know. So Eddie's amazing. Love him. Such a great partner to have doing this with. It's incredible.
Well, fantastic. Well, I hope some plans may change, but obviously not at the expense of you guys getting less contracts, but hopefully you can make it out, and looking forward to seeing you. And if not, Eddie and I will have a drink on you.
There you go. Please do.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Matt. We'll talk soon. Everybody else, that is our episode for today. If you want more information on Student Housing Insight, go to studenthousinginsight.com. Also want to remind everybody about our monthly webinar called Shop Talk. You can get more information on that at shoptalk.info. It is the monthly webinar for the student housing industry, specifically in the U.S. We do talk about Canada from time to time, but I'm really focused on operators in the U.S. as well as developers and owners. So if you fit one of those categories, make sure that you go and register at shoptalk.info. So that you can get those reminders about those meetings. I believe the next one, once this podcast comes out, is going to be April 11th. So if you're listening to this before April 11th, make sure that you attend. Well, Matt, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you so much, Wes. Really appreciate it.